Hey, Ron, I made an Ardent Development Podcast sticker for my laptop, but I had to order a whole bunch of them, and now I have more than will fit on my laptop, and my wife won't let me use the extras to decorate the walls of the home office, so I need something to do with them. I was thinking we could give them to friends of the podcast who have left us a rating or a review in iTunes. What do you think?
That is a great idea. So, friends of the podcast, if you're enjoying listening, then please help us out. We would like you to go to ardentdev.com/iTunes. Now, that's going to take you to our iTunes page. It will forward you right along. Click on ratings and review. Do your thing there. Take a little screen print. Send that screen print to podcast@ardentdev.com with your physical mailing address, and we will send you a sticker. It's as easy as that. Problem solved.
You're listening to the Ardent Development Podcast with Ron Smith and Derek Hatchard. Whatever your role in the software development industry, join them in the search for inspiration and insights as they talk with practitioners and thought leaders from the world of tech and beyond. Visit ardentdev.com to subscribe to new episodes.
Today on this episode of the Ardent Development Podcast, we have April Wenzel, who is a veteran software engineer and technical leader whose varied career spans such fields as education, research, healthcare, and entertainment. She's also mentored and led workshops with diversity-focused organizations like HackBright Academy and Black Girls Code. So welcome, April.
Hello, thanks for having me here.
Yeah, no, thank you for joining us. I've been reading about some of your blog posts, and I've been watching some of the presentations that you've been giving on YouTube, and I wondered if you would start us off today. Just tell us a little bit about your past behavior and attitudes. You describe yourself as a jerk programmer. Can you talk to us a little bit about those days, your past days, and how you came to realize there was a problem?
Yeah, sure. So I guess for most of my career and my life, I was kind of under the impression just from parental pressure and school pressure and then, you know, pressure in the workplace that the only thing that really mattered was kind of the technical side of things. So doing well in school at first, and then it was, you know, doing technically well at my job. And those were all that mattered. And that the people were just kind of there, but kind of just an annoyance. The people were not essential to it. It was just me and the computer. That was what was most important, right? So that was kind of the impression that I was under. So although I wasn't actively trying to be cruel to people, I just kind of had a disregard for people if they in any way sort of got in the way of what I was trying to accomplish technically. So I didn't really care so much about delivering feedback in, you know, an empathetic way or anything like that. I just cared about being, quote, efficient, right? And so I thought, oh, I'm just going to be direct and just, you know, not care about people's feelings and whatnot. And I did that for a long time. And the thing is, in the software industry, I actually did quite fine because I feel like, you know, you kind of get away with that. And people, as long as you're doing technically well, you don't often face consequences for being kind of a jerk. So I think that's why it went on for so long. But during that same time in being a jerk, on a personal level, I was just really unhappy too. Because yes, you know, I was doing well at these jobs, I was making a lot of money. Externally, it seemed like I was really successful. But I was unhappy. I felt like my work wasn't very meaningful. I didn't have strong connections with people. And so that led me to kind of reevaluate my behavior, just, you know, hitting such a point where I just felt so kind of sad and alone and whatnot. It helped me decide to reevaluate my behavior. I could see where the error of my ways. And then I saw, too, that it definitely wasn't only me, that this was kind of an epidemic in tech. And I think it just ties into everything going on in tech. I mean, the lack of inclusion of diverse people, all of that. So that was the turning point for me, was just realizing that this was not just me, but a kind of global problem in tech, which is why I ended up starting my company, Compassionate Coding, to help bring more of this emotional intelligence that I discovered to everyone else in the tech industry too.
You had written an article on Medium and you titled it Confessions of a Recovering Jerk Programmer.
That's right.
Yeah. And in this, you talk about how you kind of categorize people into two camps. One are, you know, your smart people that get it, you know, are kind of above the crowd. Mm-hmm. And the other group of ones that just don't and not worth the time.
Yeah, that's actually, sadly, that's actually pretty accurate, I think.
Was it the realization that you weren't happy that led you to start thinking, to start look at why you're not happy? Or did you was there some kind of an inciting incident that made you go, oh, there's a problem. I need to do some introspection.
Yeah, I think there was definitely a turning point where I had left a company. So I had been happy at a company. And then I had brought up some concerns that I had about some of the ethics at the company. And I was told that by bringing up those concerns, that wasn't welcome there. And so then I was forced to resign. So there was definitely a moment towards the end of 2015 where I had been forced to resign from a company. And, you know, I realized that I didn't really have, you know, friends to fall back on in terms of just like moral support and whatnot. And so it was kind of a dark time. And I think that's when I started learning about compassion and whatnot. And I started realizing like, hey, like, although I stand by, you know, standing up for my ethics at that company, just in general, being in that dark time kind of led me to reevaluate kind of who I was being in the world.
One of the places that you went had a charter around being, or around kindness.
Yeah.
Can you talk to us a little bit about compassion and empathy versus kindness and why that distinction is important?
Yeah. So, you know, I do think kindness is important too. And I think, you know, I that's why I thought it would be great if that company that said one of their values was to be kind. And the problem is not that it was be kind. It was kind of how they interpreted be kind. So they kind of interpreted be kind as, you know, don't ruffle any feathers. You know what I mean? Don't give any kind of criticism of things. Don't point out where we need to improve. And I think that's so different from how I understand compassion. So for me, compassion is really an optimization problem where you're trying to minimize suffering for everyone involved. So from that angle, sometimes compassion requires that you speak very directly about problems that you see because there's suffering happening and you want to help alleviate it. So for example, at that company that said that they valued being kind, I was the only female software engineer on a team of about 40 engineers. And so I would point out things like they would often say, we need to hire a good iOS guy, right? Something like that. And I was like, you know, when you say that, you're kind of creating an image in people's heads of who we're going to hire. And it's never going to be a woman, you know, that they're going to picture when you say hire an iOS guy. So I would point out these things. And so I did that. And I did it with tact, because at this point, I'd already started to kind of practice emotional intelligence. You know, I got feedback from an untrained manager that people were scared of me because I was always talking about diversity. They actually used this word scared, you know, little old me, the only female software engineer on the team, and everyone's scared of her. Like, it was just kind of ridiculous. But the point is, it's not kind to shut down someone who's trying to talk about diversity. You know what I mean? So they said they valued kindness, but what they really valued was kind of people just, you know, not pointing out any problems and kind of pretending everything was fine. And that's not kindness. That's not compassion. Compassion really sometimes entails being very, very honest and very direct in order to push for positive change in the world.
So April, you talk about some of the team members that you might come across on a team, mm-hmm. and some of them can be very gruff. They can be bullish. And you actually, sometimes when you're dealing with these people, you think that they're very confident, that they are simply saying the way that it is. But you actually describe someone who may be less confident, less assured of themselves than what they're portraying on the team. Can you talk about how you might work with someone that is that way to kind of break through those barriers that you're seeing on these teams?
Yeah, definitely. So I think that there's kind of different types of quote jerks, maybe not to actually label them by that, but there's different kinds of people who are difficult to work with. And some of them who act very arrogant, I think some of them really are self-assured. I think there's a small set of those who really just do totally believe what they say. They may have some blind spots in that. But I think what we have that's more, not maybe more dangerous, but that's also a problem is people who see those really confident people and feel like they need to copy them, to imitate them. And they actually may have a lot of insecurities, but they want to be accepted by the group. And so they act like they know 100% that they're right. And they, you know, speak not just confidently, but arrogantly and condescendingly sometimes. And I think those are the ones that can be even more problematic just because, you know, when somebody's suffering so much, they can cause pain to those around them. And I think as far as how to work with them, I think that one thing that the company can do, and everyone on the team is part of the team, part of the company, create a level of psychological safety on the team. And by that, I mean, make it okay for people to be wrong sometimes and to express doubt about things that they're not 100% sure of and to make mistakes, you know, to make it safe so that people don't feel like they have to put up this rough exterior of always being right and, you know, being flawless, really accepting that we're, you know, fallible humans, because we are, and kind of establishing that as the baseline for how to treat people on the team, is that, you know, we're accepting of everybody, even when they do make mistakes.
You talk a little bit about ruinous empathy. And you cite Kim Scott's model.
Yes.
Can you give us an example of that?
So Kim Scott has this whole idea of radical candor, which is that you can be very direct with people, but only when it's motivated by actually caring about them is it radical candor. And on the other extreme, she has kind of quadrants, and one of the other ones is ruinous empathy. And what that means is that you don't challenge anyone on the team. And so, you know, that I would say is similar to what I was talking about earlier about that company that said they valued kindness. They were definitely closer to ruinous empathy, because it's ruinous because if you refuse to challenge people, then nothing's ever going to get better, you know? And like agile development, iterative software development in general, it's all about working to improve things. And in order to do that, we have to be honest. So that's why ruinous empathy, where you just kind of are fake nice, kind of pretending everything's perfect, that's actually really harmful as well.
So I had to look up what that was. The example that I found was a manager that is working with someone who is just so likable. You would never want to tell them they were doing anything wrong. Although, you know, they're not really doing a very good job. And then at the end, you must deal with the fact that they're not doing a very good job. And by that point, it's almost too late. Hey, this is Ron and Derek. We've both been Audible members for a long time. We're taking a short break from this interview with April to let you know how you can support the podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.
And this week, based on a recommendation from April, we are suggesting the audiobook Awakening Compassion at Work, The Quiet Power That Elevates People and Organization.
You can download this week's recommendation or pick another audiobook for free and support this podcast all at the same time by visiting ardentdev.com/audible. That's ardentdev.com/audible. Now back to the interview.
Can you tell us more about compassionate coding and how you decided to make it your mission?
Yeah, so compassion, the name came from the fact that around that dark period that I had, because I was doing all this reading and trying to kind of figure out my real values and not just what had been kind of pushed on me from my parents or society, I decided to go vegan, to stop eating animal products. I was already vegetarian at that point, but I learned more about, you know, what happens in the food industry, and I decided to go vegan. And one of the big things about being vegan is people talk about compassion, because the idea is we have compassion for all life, for including all animals. As I started reading about compassion and what it really means, I was like, oh, hey, this is what's missing in the tech industry. Because there's like zero compassion. It's like, you know, totally cold and hard most of the time. And we don't really care about the people on our team. And we don't even, as programmers, we often don't even care about the people we're building the software for. Designers care more about that. But, you know, their input is often dismissed by programmers. So I realized that compassion is really, there's like a compassion void in tech. You know, and I also, the reason I decided to make this a business and not, you know, a nonprofit or something, is that I also saw that this lack of compassion is what was causing a lot of software projects to fail as well. Because when you don't have empathy on the team, when people can't work together well, you end up wasting a lot of time and unresolved conflict. You end up making choices that aren't in the best interest of the team or the people you're building for. So you end up, you know, losing a lot of money that way. And I did research on this too to find that, you know, the common reasons software projects fail are not actually, quote, technical reasons. They're actually people problems on the team, largely. So I decided, yeah, this is actually something that will help the bottom line and that can really make a positive change in the industry. Yeah, so that's really what led me to do it. And it also helps on a personal level. So I was also seeing people being burnt out and in tech, you know, there's often discussions of that. And that's where compassion comes in. In that case, it's often self-compassion, because it helps you realize that sometimes we get messaging in tech that we're not enough, we're not learning enough, we haven't learned the latest technology, we're not doing enough, our software projects are behind schedule, whatever. You get this constant stream of messaging that something is wrong or that there's not enough. And self-compassion really helps with that, because it helps you realize that, you know, all we can do is our best. You know, it's like the prime directive from Agile Retrospectives. It's that we understand and truly believe that everybody was doing their best given their circumstances. And I think that can be a really comforting thought. So anyway, so I found so much comfort in this. I saw the ability to help companies and teams be more productive and individuals be happier. And I was like, yeah, this is it, you know? And so that was a couple years ago, after I left the company that had the ruinous empathy problem. And I just really decided to run with it. And it's really been resonating with people, which is really encouraging and really exciting.
What I wanted to ask you about before we started was who does it resonate with? So when I researched this, I read some of your articles and I watched your video online, and I got it. So is this also a topic that is being observed and by the CEOs of these large companies? Who do you find that you resonate with the most?
So usually who reaches out to me to request a workshop or to find out more is somebody at like the team lead level or above on a software team. So they're definitely more on the technical side of things. Sometimes they'll be VP of engineering or a CTO will reach out, but it's definitely somebody on usually part of the engineering side of the organization, which is interesting because you might think that, you know, caring about people would maybe resonate with people in HR or whatnot. And I do make some context there, but I think the problem is that the severity of the problem, I think, is only really evident to people who are really in the weeds a bit, like in the actual, or on the front lines, I guess, so that really see this and see how valuable it can be if we address this. And so I think that that's why it resonates more with people on the technical side of things. But yeah, that's kind of who reaches out to me.
That reminds me of some comments that I had made to coworkers several years ago around acquisitions and how people who haven't been part of a company that's being acquired often don't behave well when they are acquiring another company because they don't have empathy for what those people are experiencing as the acquisition is going through and as the integration happens afterward. That is probably the area that I saw it most clearly, that empathy was critical inside of an organization.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
As I was reading about compassionate coding, as I've read the things that you've written, listened to your talks, been picturing what in my mind is the stereotypical jerk programmer, the person who is projecting an aggressive or a harsh or a cold exterior, or they're devoid of empathy, and you're coming into the organization brought in by somebody else, and they're the detractor. They're saying, why do we need this? Or I think this is stupid. What do detractors say, and how do you respond to them?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thankfully, before I go in, I usually acquire a good amount of like buy-in. And so that usually helps when I'm actually coming into the team. But some of the things they say, so some of the nicer detractors will say things like, well, it's the curmudgeons on the team who get respect. So, you know, it's the difficult people who get respect. So we have to be, you know, aggressive because we're the ones, that's the way we get respect. And with those people, I explain to them that they can play a role in changing the status quo, and that if they would prefer an industry where people don't feel that pressure, that they can help build it. And that, you know, because a lot of those people, those kinds of detractors, they actually don't want to be a jerk, but they just kind of feel the pressure to, you know, they feel like they have to fit in. On the less kind extreme of detractors, those are mostly the people online, right? And so that Confessions of a Jerk Programmer post, I didn't post it on Reddit because I avoid Reddit by like as much as I can, but somebody did. And so somebody linked it to me and I was reading the comments and they're just like, just very not nice. Like they're just, you know, people saying that it's, you know, like they'll say there's so many easy ways to make fun of it. And I know because when I was a jerk, I would have made fun of it too. So like, it's like soft stuff or, you know, it's weak or like I'm weak or this is just nonsense. This is fluffy nonsense, whatever it is. Those are kind of, I do get that pushback. And to them, I just click mute and no, I'm just kidding. But to them, I say, well, the thing is with them, there's not always something to say. And this is something I learned in going vegan too, is that really all we can do is go around and plant seeds of the positive change we want in the world. And so I've become detached from the outcome in terms of actually being able to change everyone's mind and, but committed to my efforts. And so sometimes, you know, I have to make peace with the fact that I'm going to plant this seed and it may not grow immediately and just make peace with that. And, that's actually brought me great comfort as well, especially as somebody who tends to be, you know, more type A and whatever, but finding peace with detachment has really helped with those who are on the other end of the other extreme there.
A few weeks ago, we had interviewed Mike Hayes and he had talked about emotional intelligence and he had talked about someone who has a ceiling and they don't know why they have that ceiling, being able to break through and how it's a different skill set when you're climbing the corporate ladder.
Mm-hmm.
Did your did your view of what it takes to climb the corporate ladder change when you had this realization? Because before, you had so much of a weight put on being the smartest, saying it like it is, mm-hmm. and being the most competent, and in fact, perhaps pushing down peers to climb your ladder. But when we talked with Mike about the emotional intelligence ceiling that's there, when you realize that when you climb, the farther up a corporate ladder you climb, the more you're now dealing with people, and you're open to your emotional intelligence. I'm curious as to your perception as to the old you. Was there a potential for you to go right up through all the levels of a corporation and run it because you're the smart enough person to do it? And now, is there a different view that, is there an understanding now that it's not just about being the smartest person in the room technically, that there's this whole other world over there? Do you have different ceilings when you look at the old you and the new you?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It's kind of funny because all the messaging that I got when I was starting out as an engineer was avoid management. Don't get pushed into management. And it's partly because I am a woman. And so there was this warning, like, women are going to get pushed into management. So do everything you can to avoid getting management, which now I kind of think that that's terrible advice, because managers get a lot of power and can create a lot of positive change. And you can stay technical and a manager. But anyway, so because of that, it was never my goal to climb any corporate ladders. Even when you were saying that phrase, I was just like cringing a little bit, because I've always been not a fan of like corporate America in general. So I'm not even, so yeah, so it was never my goal to climb corporate ladders. But that said, I think that there are definitely CTOs out there who have maintained their not very emotionally intelligent ways and all the way to the CTO position. So at least the highest technical position in a company, I think that's definitely still an option, sadly. But I also would like for that to change. But I think, you know, like I said, among engineers who want to, quote, stay technical and avoid management, it's almost seen as like a liability to grow emotional intelligence. And I say this because I was at a networking event and I met this woman who was a manager. She said something she had done on the team. And I was like, oh, wow, that was an emotionally intelligent move. And she was like, well, don't tell anyone, it'll ruin my cred. Meaning that because she wanted to like still have the appearance of being, you know, an engineer, she didn't want to be associated with emotional intelligence. So while I do think emotional intelligence is key for climbing corporate ladders in the general sense, I think that because of the toxic ways of the tech industry, you can still do quite well without it on, like, in terms of in an individual. And it's really, and by quite well, I mean, you know, by cold kind of technical means of like external success. But I think you won't be able to find fulfillment. And I think you are more likely to burn out. And I think your teams are more likely to have failures in terms of their projects, because of your lack of emotional intelligence and retention, you're going to do terribly there. So there will be cost to it, but the tech industry still has a long ways to go before they really recognize fully the importance of emotional intelligence.
So Avril, before we let you go, can you tell people where they can find you online?
Yes. So the best way is to come to my website, compassionatecoding.com. And I have a newsletter sign up there. And I'm going to be sending out information soon on a course that I'm writing on avoiding burnout in tech using this foundation of emotional intelligence. So that's coming out soon. I'm also on Twitter at April Wenzel, and my company's Twitter, because of Twitter username length restrictions, is at Compassion Code.
Sounds great. We will put links to all of those things and the Medium article that we are referencing in the show notes. People can find them there.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much for your time.
You've been listening to the Ardent Development Podcast. Be sure to visit ardentdev.com for the show notes, including links to the resources mentioned. And don't forget to sign up for email notifications so you're the first to know about new episodes. You can also connect with us on the Ardent Development Facebook page or follow us on Twitter @ardentdev. If you enjoyed the show, tell a friend about it. Thanks for listening.